If you've been wanting to work with me one-on-one, this is for you. If you're an ambitious woman balancing the demands of motherhood and your career, or you're a business owner and you're done talking about your challenges and you are determined not only to find a solution, but to feel alive and energized while getting the support you need, I've got you. There's nothing more frustrating than asking for help only to feel like it's one more thing added to your to-do list. Head on over to heatherchauvin.com/focus. Take 2 minutes, fill out the application to work with me one-on-one, and we'll be in touch. One of my strengths and what my clients always tell me is I have a gift of looking at your current situation and showing you exactly where you need to focus to get the results your soul is craving. My work is designed to empower women like you to reclaim your capacity, increase profits, and strengthen your relationships. Join the countless women already seeing incredible results. Picture having me by your side every step of the way, ensuring your success. Visit Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/focus, and apply today. That's heatherchauvin.com/focus.
I truly believe the reason why everyone says let's have uncomfortable conversations about racism is because we all have work to do. Hey ladies, I am back, and today I'm actually really excited to share today's conversation with you with me, Sasha, and Sarah. They are the co-hosts of the Dear White Women podcast and the new authors of the book called Dear White Women, Let's Get Uncomfortable Talking About Racism. I'm going to give you a little background on Sarah and me, Sasha, but before I do, I just want to talk about why this conversation is really important. In the last few years, I think we all have been disrupted in some capacity in our lives. And regardless of your beliefs or where you are in the world or your current life state, we know what division looks like and we know what division feels like. And I truly believe that if we want to create conscious, emotionally intelligent children, and we, you know, whether you're an empath or you're highly sensitive or whatever you identify as, and you can feel it. You can feel anger. You can feel hate. You can feel overwhelm. You can feel frustration. You can feel shame. I think we need to really understand other people's stories and not be so in our own shit and triggered by our own ego or our guilt or allowing our feelings to get hurt. You know, privilege is being able to walk away from a conversation and not be affected by you literally walking away. Like, your life is not impacted by what's happening in that conversation, so you can essentially avoid it. And it's very easy to do that because it gets cozy and comfortable on your side of the fence, and then we just can throw judgment towards other people. And I think having these uncomfortable conversations and having these, let's call them emotionally uncomfortable conversations, is just about, it's a growth opportunity. So whether you're choosing to create more time in your life, more space in your life, you desire to make a bigger impact in the world, you have to get uncomfortable regardless. So why don't we get uncomfortable making other people's lives better and becoming allies for them and really understanding how to advocate for them? The more I learn about myself and the more I learn about other people, the more I realize how sheltered we were in our education, and that when you put on the cap of becoming a lifelong learner, there's always learning to do. There's always growing to do. And I really enjoyed today's conversation. I get along really well with me, Sasha, and Sarah. And I also want you to head on over to your podcast app and go download their podcast, Dear White Women. It's amazing. It's beautifully eye-opening. And when my book comes in, it hasn't come in yet. I will be diving into their book as well. But, you know, they're here to help. They're here to have these conversations. And I think we're all living in a world where we're curious and we want to learn more about people. But when we don't know, we judge. And then when we judge, we get defensive. And when we get defensive, we shut down. And when we shut down, we play small in our lives. And so I'm here just to have a conversation with you to hopefully shed some light and help you, you know, open your heart, open your mind, ask yourself different questions, have different questions at the dinner table, speak up when you hear things in your community. This is the ripple effect. This is how we're going to create change. And I'm telling you right now, it is a drop in a way bigger bucket. So when you don't think nothing matters, or when you think, wow, I have so much learning to do, or relearning or unlearning, I'm telling you right now, the fact that you're even willing to listen to this conversation and not be reactive and come from a place of anger and frustration and overwhelm and just sit with your own emotional shit and be wildly emotionally uncomfortable or curious, staying in a mental curious state, you're already making a huge impact in the world. So thank you. So head on over to your podcast app, and you are going to download Dear White Women, and you are going to follow the ladies at dearwhitewomen.com. You can check them out on Instagram. You can buy their book online, anywhere books are sold, but they will definitely have those details at dearwhitewomen.com. So, Miss Sasha is a graduate of Harvard and Columbia Law. She has been practicing litigation for over 15 years and is passionate about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the legal profession as well as in her communities. She's a facilitator, a writer, and speaker regarding issues of racial justice and children. She's the co-host of the Dear White Women podcast, a social justice podcast. And she is biracial, Japanese and white. She's married to a black man and is the proud mom of two very active multiracial young boys. They live in the Bay Area in California. And Sarah helps build community. It said something about her cats here, and so I just thought that was funny. Sarah helps build community and connection through conscious conversations, which she does as a facilitator, a TEDx speaker, a writer, and a consultant. After graduating from Harvard and working at Goldman Sachs, Sarah pursued the science and technique of well-being and is a certified life coach and author of two books, and one of them being Dear White Women. Let's get uncomfortable talking about racism. All right, ladies, we are going to dive into all things motherhood and racism, being human first, talking all things community, and making our world a little bit better just by understanding each other a little bit more. Let's dive in. All right. Hello, everyone. I'm really excited for today's podcast episode with me, Sasha, and Sarah of the Dear White Women podcast. And now, new book. Where's the book, ladies? Let's see it. Dear White Women, love it. What's the tagline?
Let's get uncomfortable talking about racism.
Love it. So let's get uncomfortable today, shall we? I want to give I don't really have a little bit of background, but I want both of you to give a little bit of background of how this book came to be, both of your perspectives. And I know you have your podcast, which has become, how long has the podcast been out?
2.5 years.
Wow.
We're on episode 134 coming out tomorrow. So,
hey,
So yeah, a little bit about the history of the podcast, how the book came about, and this whole conversation. Go for it, Sarah.
So I guess it has to start with a quick note about my identity, because I'm biracial. I did not really realize how important that identity was to me until somebody called me this year after the Atlanta shootings happened, where a whole bunch of Asian women were murdered. And someone called me and they're like, I didn't think I'd have to call you, but how are you doing? And it was like my childhood identity, being born and raised under my Japanese immigrant mom's roof, collided with the second half of my life being married to a white Canadian man and raising white presenting kids. And I was like, oh, this is who I am as a whole person. And it was interesting because me, Sasha, and I've been involved in this work for, you know, 2.5 years. We met 25 years ago, walking out of a racial identity conversation. So these conversations are not new, but for me, this racial awakening, even in the conversation for so long, continues to happen. And I really realize it's a work in progress, always, for all of us. So I really want to leave it to me, Sasha, to tell the story about why this book, because I asked her, why are we doing this book? Literally, this question, why is this so important during a pandemic? Because we wrote it last year as everything was shut down. Why is this important for us to do? And her answer, as my best friend for a long, long time, is what made us do it.
So before I get to that answer, I need to back up a little too, because I'm also biracial, daughter of a Japanese immigrant father. And I love what you said, Sarah, about this year being sort of that reality, or the two halves, or whatever, the two identities that you have merging together. Because I think for me, it has always been so front of mind that it's hard to not see it in my life, if that makes sense. And along those lines, my husband is Black. I have two kids who are Black, Japanese, and white, two boys. And my older son is now, he just turned 9. And he's at that age where he's no longer, for me, he's always going to be cute and my baby, but he's not going to be seen that way, right, by everyone else. He's moved from the cute to, he's moving to the aggressive. And that is terrifying for me because, you know, as Sarah and I, you know, we met 25 years ago, we had conversations since walking out of that racial identity discussion. And a lot of our conversations, once we became mothers, centered around hopes and dreams and fears for our kids. And in writing this book, you know, we wrote it, as Sarah mentioned, during COVID and the shutdown, but it wasn't just that. We wrote it between the election, the 2020 election, and the insurrection on January 6th. So it was a particularly tumultuous period in our history. And it was coming off of a period where we had just witnessed a Black man being murdered in front of all of our eyes, right? And when Sarah asked me that question, you know, why are we writing this book now? I said, because I'm trying to save my kids' lives. Like, it is very simple to me. That if even one person reads this book, and that person is the person who could directly impact my son's safety, that's it. That's enough. That is this whole process completely justified. And not only for my kids, if this book changes one person's viewpoint and that saves another kid, that's enough. So, you know, it seems simple. The process was not simple, but I'm so happy we did this.
Thank you. Were you surprised of anything that came up while both of you were writing the book versus when you are producing a podcast or interviewing people?
I mean, Sasha had to deal with me kicking and screaming about, like, this is so painful. We have to edit this again. And yes, I mean, it's a process, right? Because, and I think with having to look at this as a whole versus for our podcast, you know, it's episode by episode. We do have a structure, but you can grow through the whole process of weekly episodes and finding your voice. This was like we have an end product we are creating, and we want to make it as palatable and as welcoming as we can for busy people, busy white people, to pick it up and put it down. Like, we had this target of who we want to reach out to, who we want to welcome into the conversation. So to consistently have to make sure that we were delivering top-notch quality in a voice and a tone that really was ours to reach out and deliver was, it was something, but I think we did it.
Sasha, were you going to say something?
Yeah. I mean, so I personally didn't mind the editing part, because like the lawyer, I know Sarah like loves when I say this, because like the lawyer in me, like, you always are rewriting briefs, and you never, it's such a revision process. And I'm like, oh, we're only rewriting this like a couple of times. It's okay. But I think for me, like, to really focus on the practical is tricky, right? And because we wanted readers to really leave each chapter with like, this is what I can do in my daily life. This is, you know, little things I can do by, you know, by myself, with my colleagues at work, in my PTA, with my kids. Those tips, it also really made me think about what was I doing in my life, and what could I be doing more of?
So yes, the painful process of writing a book. And I,
you just know,
yes, you do.
And I've gained so much more appreciation for authors because of that. Every time I talk to one now, or I get a book, I'm like, oh, like, this is the cheapest like gift to the world. And someone's like, I can't afford it. I'm like, okay, I gotta inhale and exhale. I'm like, if you only knew what I put in there, like, here, I'll send it to you, but please read it. Please read it. It's so important. So much time, energy, effort, wisdom goes into it. And it's a gift, right? Like, you are purchasing a gift from somebody, and it makes such a bigger ripple. And so when I receive something like that now, I'm like, it's my job to read it. It's my job to integrate it, right? Let it, not just let it go inside and be like, oh, that was nice, and move on, but like, live it. And not something that you're just going to read once either. You're going to read it again and again and again, you know, highlighting, dog earing, doing all that stuff to every word that's in there. So I just want to say thank you, because I know, yeah, you put it out there and people are like, can I have audio version of this? And then you do the audio version. Can I have, like, you know, you're just like, can you just stop being so fucking privileged and read the goddamn book? I'm just going to say it. So let's talk about that. Dear White Women, when I read that title, I'm a white woman. There's a, oh God.
I was wondering, do you feel?
No, offended? Well, I know you. So right. Anyways, go ahead. Ask me the question.
Well, I'm going to couch this in context, because when we first launched the podcast, we had wondered, you know, just a handful of people being like, you're racist, you're calling people white. And then with the book, again, people haven't read the book, and we're getting these reviews, people saying, I could never read such a racist book. And keep in mind, like, it's not available. Like, when we were getting these reviews, the book was not yet available for reading. So people are reacting to the title alone. And yet, I think we're very used to naming other races, other air quotes, like Asian or Black or Native American. Like, we name all the races. So I find it interesting to see some of these vocal responses from people when they are called white. And so I was curious what sort of, you said you had like that feeling too.
Well, I think I know both of you, and I know you're very like, my assumption or my experience is loving, compassionate, open. But I think people, so I can only experience from my experience, right? So when someone's calling you white, typically it's loaded, and it's like, I'm going to be called out on something. So, but that is the whole freaking point of this conversation, is to be like, hey, let's have this quote unquote uncomfortable conversation. But to me, an uncomfortable conversation is emotionally discomfort. Like, it's emotionally uncomfortable. It doesn't mean it's disrespectful. It's just emotionally uncomfortable. I think I'm at a different point. Like, if you were asking me this 2 years ago or 3 years ago, it would be a different conversation. now I run towards it and I'm like, ooh, I'm curious what this is about. So I think the resistance, I think it's just important for anyone when you're reading any title of a book, if it triggers you, like that is a sign that you should probably run towards it or be curious about it rather than defensive. And I think that's part of, I'm assuming your message that you're trying to get across is like the walls that we're building are not life enhancing for the movement of humanity. Also, I want to get into this whole podcast is about motherhood or mom is in control. And I want to talk about motherhood and racism. And I want to preface this with modern parenting, but parenting in general, historically, is overwhelming. We have a lot on our back, we like on our shoulders, a lot of to-dos, overwhelm, all of that. But I also believe from my perspective that we busy ourselves to avoid conversations like this. I don't believe anything is really more important than having like human conversations, like getting my children to an activity to avoid reading a book or having a conversation. I don't believe that's more important. Like really it's about humanity and us coming together. So let's talk about the responsibility of that motherhood and racism.
I'm hoping Misasha will share a story that I'm thinking of that maybe she can sense through my ESP that I want her to share. But I think the number one thing I want people to think about is that your kids are absorbing messages about race, regardless of whether you're talking about it or not. And so are you comfortable with the messages that they're getting, or do you want to have a say in it? Because, you know, studies have shown kids are differentiating people based on their appearance by the time they're 6 months old. And by the time they're 4 or 5, they're choosing playmates and really using race as the reason they're going to pick playmates. Like peak expressions of racism are happening at that stage. So if you're not talking about your kids, they are getting the message somewhere. And so by saying, well, I'm just going to put my head down, they're going to absorb, you know, they'll just see by my actions, is actually shown that they're not going to see that you're friendly to the cashier or the doctor or the whoever you're interacting with that's outside of your racial identity, and just assume that they know that you think that all people are deserving of respect. You know, those are blatant conversations we need to have. And in particular, there's one really clear word that I think we need to teach our kids not to use, and that's the N-word. Because there is no word that can be used to cut down a white person in the same way that word can be used to cut down a Black person. And unless we tell our kids that, you know, kids are being called this in elementary school. I don't think you want your kid to be the one calling people that in elementary school, but it is happening. And so we need to get ahead of that. I wanted to get ahead of that with my kids. And I think there's more of this story to come.
Yeah. Miss Sasha.
Yeah. So when I think about the N-word, I think about it in the sense that I know my boys will be called the N-word, right? Like I'm very much a realist about that. So to put this in context, when I hear, because I have had white parents ask me, you know, I don't want to traumatize my kids. And I feel like discussing race with them and whiteness will traumatize them. So that's why we don't do it. And that is a very privileged position, right? Because in my house, we are discussing race every day so that they will survive. That's, you know, the baseline, right? I want my kids to come back to my house each day. And so if you're telling me that you are afraid of traumatizing your kids, then I feel like you're not seeing that we are all in this conversation together. It's not what you can do to help. It's what you can do to be in this conversation, because we all need each other. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the story that Sarah is alluding to is the fact that, you know, someone very close to me was first called the N-word by a white mom. And it was because he took the place of her white son on the baseball team. And in front of the entire team, to the coach, she says, "I can't believe you picked this N-word over my son. He was 10. No one said anything." And so think about how formative of an experience that is for everyone there, right? Not just the person, the boy who's being called the N-word, right? But for those teammates, for the parents, for the coaches. And I think this is a question that we really want to ask parents, right? Do you want your child to stand there and say nothing? Do you want your child to know enough to stand up and say, that's not okay? Because sometimes the person who's being called that cannot answer, right, in that moment. And I think kids, especially what gives me hope is that kids who are the ages of our kids are really open to these discussions. You know, I had a girl ask me, who was 7, right? She's like, I'm pink, or my skin color is pink, but I'm called white. So can you tell me, you know, the difference? And so they're naturally curious, right? They want to know. And so I think by saying like, shh, we don't talk about that, you know, or making it shameful or making it someone else's issue, we are doing a gigantic disservice to our kids. Because as Sarah pointed out, they're going to learn it somewhere, right? Be it on TikTok, be it through their peers, be it through older siblings, whatever, they're going to know and they're going to form their own opinions. So much like we want to do as parents to really influence our kids' decisions, I think this is one of those things that is like the crucial thing that we need to be talking about.
Yeah. And something that I just keep going back to your story about her saying, well, I don't want to traumatize my children. And there's a huge story there around how are these conversations traumatizing, right? And trying to protect your children. We are all trying to protect our children. And it goes back to emotional intelligence around, like, if you don't have the ability to have these conversations with yourself or your peers, or, you know, you ask questions, you're not the teacher. You're just like, what do you think? Let's have critical thinking conversations about this. I don't see anything that's traumatizing in there. And I don't understand. It's not about not understanding. It's about, yeah, being open. But whether it's race or whether it is other areas of life, by you avoiding and believing that it's going to be detrimental to your child, you are doing your child a huge disservice by avoiding. You're making it about, it's actually about you not wanting to have the uncomfortable conversation.
Right. But then I think, you know, it comes back to what you said earlier, that sense of guilt or people being made to feel like they're going to make one mistake and be canceled. Like, to be clear, we don't believe in cancel culture. We really, if we're going to step into these conversations and say, we need to come into this together, like, these are not subjects and conversations that are taught. The same way that your work, this idea of introspection and really freeing ourselves to live our truth as women, we're not taught that in school. So we're going to step in it. We're going to make mistakes. All of it is uncomfortable. Talking about race is uncomfortable for every single person on this planet because we all have our own relationship to this externally perceived identity. All of it is a construct, but we have power hierarchies. We have pressure, societal things about we're not allowed to be angry. Like, there's so much here, but there is such reward when we can like face our humanity, be okay making mistakes, but really being willing to learn and humble and like there's just so much to unpack. And it's okay for us to step into this with that curiosity that you talk about, as opposed to I should feel guilty, because that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. And guilt would be I'm doing something bad, which comes from, I believe, perfection, which is I think a privileged thing to do, because, you know, like the fact that you believe that you have the opportunity to make mistakes where other people don't get that opportunity to make mistakes. It's like, oh, you can walk away, right? You can avoid, you can put it down. And like me, Sasha was saying, that's literally the definition of privilege. you have to open to learning, open to opportunity. And the beautiful thing is the more I read, the more I listen, the more I ask, I think nothing is changing. And then all of a sudden I hear things differently, right? When I'm in conversations, when I'm walking down the street, and I have visceral reactions and then words come out of my mouth. And then action is taken. So where before I think it's just out of sight, out of mind, right? And so the more you learn, the more open you are to seeing these things in your everyday life. So even if you come into this being like, oh, you know, pretending that it's not happening around you, you will see and hear things differently. And I think that's where we're at. And that's where we've always been. And now we have the opportunity because you're listening and you ladies have a beautiful book. I want to see the book again. I want to know when it's available. Dear White Women, where is it available? When is it available?
It's available October 12th, 2021, coming out. And you can buy it basically. I mean, we like to refer people to independent bookstores via bookshop.org, but I think it's available on Amazon. There will be an audio version coming out for those people who really want to have the audio version, like you said, coming out this year as well. So you will be able to access it in basically all of the convenient locations.
Awesome. And we're still going to continue this conversation. So what I want to know what the format is of the book. Like, am I learning stories? Is there actions? What's the reader going to walk away with?
Yeah. So great question. So the book is in three sections, right? It starts with being white in America. Then there's being Black in America. And then there's being a non-Black person of color in America. And each section is very much structured like our podcast in a lot of ways. They're very short, mini little chapters in each section. And each one has three parts: listen, learn, and act. So in the listen section, you get to hear a personal narrative, or you get to read a personal narrative. In the learn section, you learn about sort of the history of how we got to, you know, whatever that topic is, or how we got, you know, throughout our country to the place where this is a problem. And then act, what we've been talking about, those little practical things, those nuggets that you can take away and, you know, implement in your daily life in, you know, intentional yet purposely not super difficult ways.
Love it. How do you get somebody to act in doing anti-racism work? I'm just curious. When we live in a culture that is so addicted to busy and hustle and go, 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 how do we integrate this into our daily life?
I have to say, in my experience, I think you have to start with why. Why do you even care? Is there a person in your life that might be affected by this? Or is there a child in your life who you want to raise differently to be more thoughtful with critical thinking skills? Is there, you know, like you, none of this work raising consciousness about anything is like easy, right? It takes effort, but we're all doing effortful things to put food on the table, to make a career, to make change. Like we're doing these things anyway. So if you can sort of do what you're doing, but pivot it just a little bit to change the direction, we can still make significant change. And I think unless you know the why, it's not necessarily going to be sustained change. I think we have to be careful around like, I'm doing it because I want to be seen as anti-racist, like for this external validation versus I really care and I want to live my life in this way where I live in self-inquiry, where I think about how I can choose where to put my dollars or what to vote for. Like, I think all of it is stuff we may be doing anyway, but again, we have to know why we want to shift our focus just a little bit.
Hey, Sasha.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very intentional, right? I think we've seen what happens when it's performative and when, you know, in June of 2020, everyone went to the Black-owned bookstores and asked for all the anti-racism books and then got upset when they weren't fulfilled right away because they weren't used to handling such orders from a largely white crowd that had, up until that point, largely ignored those bookstores. And then that demand, you know, dropped off. And so I think it is a very intentional thing that we need to do. And I think that the personal connection can also not be undersold, right? I think that when you understand personally that not only is it better for the people who are affected in these marginalized groups, but it's actually better for all of us, right? All of us, white Americans included, or white people included, that we are all linked, our futures are all linked, then it becomes, that why becomes maybe a little more clear, right? It's not just good, it's not just a good thing to be a good person, but it's actually better for me and my family as well.
And the other thing I think about is our kids are constantly teeing up opportunities for us to step into this work, right? If your kid has ever asked for the before, I mean, I know now that there are all these skin color crayon sets that are available. We love, you know, all of us, the crayon line. There's like Crayola. If you need to go, you know, major corporation has a skin color, but like, if you don't go and buy that and your kid asks for the skin color crayon, are you going to hide and duck? Or are you like, could you dive into that opportunity for three sentences and be like, what color crayon do you mean? What, like, we, there's so many different beautiful shades of brown on this planet. Like, what color is your skin color called? And then end of story. Like, they give us opportunity. And so it, you know, then it becomes your choice. How do you want to respond to those moments that your kids tee up for you? Because like you said, Misasha, earlier, they are having these conversations. I have been so blown away by the things that our kids are talking about in school. And they seem to be more thoughtful around the greater state, because I think all of us during COVID were wrapped up. Like, they saw what was happening during COVID and George Floyd's murder, and they're getting these messages, right? So I don't know. I think they provide also that motivation to get involved in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's been interesting raising three white boys. They are they keep changing ages. And, yeah. 9, almost 12, and 16. So 3 very different perceptions of the world. And just having these conversations, reading together, talking about it, mainly just from their perspective, me not even saying anything, but just like, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? How do you think that, you know, what do you think their experience is like? And just having those conversations and the beautiful, I watch it with their friends that come over and something will be said. And then I hear them say something else. But it is about these conversations. The interesting part, kind of like what you were saying, Sarah, is how they're so open. I think we project a lot of fear onto our children of trying to protect them. And I do believe the adults do more harm than good sometimes with like the protection, because they are so open. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that when I was your age, or I wasn't even open to that, or that wasn't even exposed to me. And I think I don't want to say they're a little more evolved. I think children are just way more, well, let's call them more evolved than adults. I feel like we then learn, and part of our job is to unlearn, right? We're unlearning a lot in our adult years. And just listening to you, and a lot of women that listen to me on this podcast, you know, we are very impact driven. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in your work. It could be in your home. The reason why you're listening to a podcast about mothering is because you want to become better, right? You want to become better. You want to do different. Maybe you want to unlearn or break some patterns in your own childhood. And this conversation is directly related to the undoing and raising that consciousness. I'm curious your thoughts on, well, Sarah, were you going to say something about that?
Well, yeah, because I think this idea of unlearning is really a fascinating one, and thinking about where this generation has come up. And I look at our headers, for those who aren't watching this, but who are listening to it, each one of us has our preferred pronouns on our video screen. And I think about this in the context of like, preferred pronouns were not a thing when I was growing up. Like, what is this? Are we kidding? But yet, it is incredible that in certain schools, certainly in my middle schooler's classroom, they were going around and introducing themselves and their preferred pronouns. And a friend of mine who's in the justice system in Canada said recently an edict came down that in courtrooms in Canada, lawyers are now required to introduce themselves and the preferred pronouns of both themselves and their clients and everybody there, so the bench knows how to address people. Like, this is a total shift in how we are approaching the idea of gender and identity. And I think similarly, if we're seeing that, we are seeing changes in how people talk about race, right? And how people think about people's appearance.
Yeah, it's very normal for my children, especially my 8-year-old or almost 9-year-old. No, he's 9 now. I said he's 9. Very normal for him and some of the friends that he has. It's like, Mom, this is it. Like, where have you been? Right. So I think there is change happening. We just can't screw up our children too much. The unlearning, it's just a shedding, right? It's a cleansing. It's like letting go of what is not serving the human race and stop pretending that we know it all and listen more. And it's okay. It's okay. We're constantly learning and growing. I had a thought and then it left my brain. So let's talk about community. This is what happens when I'm trying to let go of caffeine and it is not benefiting my mental health in any capacity. So slowly letting it go. But let's talk about community. The importance of community when we're learning and growing and trying to create. Oh, that's what I was talking about. Impact.
I brought up I interrupted with the pronoun thing.
In my thought process. So everyone's impact driven, right? They want to be the change they want to see in the world. This is so important, an important conversation to be having, because just because we think, you know, I want to become a better parent, or I want to help my children not feel the way that I did, and I need to learn emotional intelligence. This goes in how we see people, our, you know, unconscious bias that we have, and our conditioning and learning and growing. So it's all freaking connected. So when you think, I don't need to know that, pay attention to what you're avoiding or what you're just pushing off to make yourself more comfortable in your life. So yes, let's get to community. And then we're going to wrap it up because I know we could talk forever. What is the importance of community, especially when you're surrounding yourself, the learning, unlearning? Let's talk about that.
I think it's hugely important because, you know, in the world of positive psych, there's really only 3 ways to analyze anything, right? You can either think about it, talk about it, or write about it. But studies have shown over and over, if you're grappling with something, you're looking for an analytical solution for something, just sitting there in your own mental space, like thinking it over, is actually going to have a detrimental effect on your longer term health. Whereas talking about it or writing about it really can help you understand a situation better. And so for some people, that looks like, oh, hey, I've got this great book club. We can read all these anti-racism books and have that conversation. For some people, they may not have that. You know, there's a lot of people who live in communities that are largely white. The way that our immigration patterns and migration patterns have happened in the U.S., you may just not have different perspectives in your community or people who are willing to have these conversations. And I understand that too. And so maybe you find a trusted friend, or you reach out to people who are doing this work and you listen to podcasts like this to help you learn and sort of talk it out with yourself. But I think having somebody that you can bounce ideas around with is super helpful. I mean, Sasha is incredible for me, where I'm like, did you see this? What do you think? Like, having that accountability and also a way to talk things out for yourself in some way is I think really helpful for the work, because then you also practice that sense of not being judged. Like, you can mess up in front of someone who's safe and they can gently give you some feedback or give you a different perspective than the one you originally had.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fear, right? Like what we've been discussing around having these conversations or knowing where to start, especially if you didn't grow up having these conversations and this is part of your learning and trying to. And as we've been discussing, these are uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable for everyone. And, sometimes when I'm out there on, like, my kids play a lot of sports, right? So I'm always on a soccer field or a baseball field, and we live in a very white area. So we are, you know, oftentimes like the only Black and Asian and white family, you know, out there. Actually, oddly, we engaged in some really great conversations around that. I'm not saying that that works for everyone. And I'm not saying that everyone should be, or especially if they are families of color, should have to be open to those conversations. It has worked for us. But I do agree that practicing, right? Practicing having these conversations, whether it's, you know, with a trusted person, even, you know, with your kids, right? Like, and I understand it is messy. I mess up all the time. I am always like, it feels like you're like caught in these, you know, like a deer in the headlights, right? Because my kids will ask me something and they're both in elementary school. So they're very open and they'll just say something. And I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea what to say. And so then be like, that's a great question. Let's look it up together. Or, you know what, mommy needs to do some work on look into this and I'll get back to you. But it can be ongoing, right? It is such a great thing when you sort of have that community around you, or you work on building that community, or you work on showing your kids that community through other sources, right? If you are in those communities that are largely homogenous, we still have media, right, as a way to see different things and to see different people doing things that are, you know, just very standard, like kids' books, where you have Black kids and you're not talking just about slavery or the civil rights movement, right? I think that there are many ways to keep this conversation going, whether it's in broader communities or within your own family community.
Love it. I've had so many thoughts and then they keep leaving my brain. But what I wanted to say is I'm hearing this theme over and over again as it's okay not to know. It's okay not to know and we'll figure it out together. And I think anytime you take that stance as a parent, that's where we get out of perfection and we move into co-creation, where it's like, let's figure it out together. And we can take that veil of perfectionism off, getting it wrong, which is the discomfort. That's the emotional discomfort. And it doesn't matter which area of your life you want to grow. You know, everyone says they want freedom. And I was like, yeah. And until everyone else is free, are you going to finally be free? And I'm getting to my thought. It's so close. I don't know what's happening to me. I'm telling you, I'm detoxing from caffeine. I'm losing it. Oh, every time I talk to somebody and I ask them like, why aren't you taking action? Or, you know, what's really going on here? And they're like, I just feel so guilty. And I'm like, but you're making it about you. And this could be in any area of your life. I'm like, you're making it about you. When we are making it about us, we're like, I'm doing something wrong. I am bad. I. But when you're making your action, like reading that book, right? Organizing a book club, having those uncomfortable conversations, it's not about you. It's about us. It's about we. And when we're moving our lives from an I movement to a we movement, that's where the ripple effect happens. So it doesn't matter if we're talking about self-care or if we're talking about racism or if we're talking about like any area of your life, when we're moving it from I to we, this is where we have the ripple. That's what my thought was. This is like bad. I told my husband, I need to like not drink coffee, like let it go on a weekend, not on a Monday morning. I want to wrap up this conversation. And any last words that you have to say? And then I have one last question for you.
I'll just like double down and reemphasize what you just said, because I completely agree with this idea of moving from the me culture to the we culture. And I've been told in the past, like I'm living in fantasy land, the we culture is itty bitty right now and the me culture is very large. But I think all of us involved in shifting the focus of these conversations to remember the essential truth, which is that none of us are here alone. Like unless you're truly living off the grid, in which case you're not listening to this podcast because you can't, because you don't have a phone and a service, right? Like we're all interconnected, and connecting to that, we really feels a lot more like freedom because you're connected to a greater purpose other than yourself. And so I love that you are doing the work in that realm also, because all of this is connected. As we each break down our perfection, as we each, you know, question ourselves and connect with each other, we are all part of improving humanity together.
I also love what you said regarding co-creation, right? Along with loving everything that you both just said. I think about when I was growing up, it was very much expected, right? That parents had all the answers, and that if they didn't have the answer that you wanted to hear, that's too bad, because that was going to be the answer. And it is it is vulnerable, right? To be in front of your kids and say, I don't know. But I think that is part of the unlearning that we do. And I think that we become so much more powerful as a family when, you know, your kids trust that it's not just you saying something for the sake of giving them a quick answer and moving on. Like, it is something that you are all involved in to figure it out. And I think there is a lot of power, right, in that collective thought process. So if that's something we want to see in the world, that's something that we can really make a difference in at home. And so I love where this conversation has gone on that regard.
So speaking of that co-creation, where can people find the book? And do you have anything coming up around the book? Are you doing a book club or anything? I know you had one for your own podcast community. So I'm curious what you're doing with the book, where they can get more of it, and both of you.
Yeah, you can always find all of our information centered at www.dearwhitewomen.com. And obviously a lot of stuff on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. But we are creating book club questions. We are having book launch events that are all virtual, so people can chime in. Again, October 12th is our actual book launch. And we will continue to be having conversations both virtually, but also we've been doing a lot of work with organizations and being able to come in and have small group conversations in your place of employment, depending on groups. You know, we're here for all of these conversations based around this book. And so you can reach out to us again at that website, dearwhitewomen.com.
I'm curious what kind of conversations you're having in organizations.
A lot lately on intersectionality.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, we are talking about who gets to bring their whole selves to work and who doesn't. And we lean into our, I mean, the same way with the book, but our own identities as biracial women to lead those conversations, to again, start the process of welcoming more people into the conversation and understanding that we are one of 7 billion people. Like, there are so many stories out there, so many perspectives. And just to remember that with a sense of curiosity.
Love it. Miss Sasha, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think it's just been really exciting to see how the book can be so effective in different settings, because I think, you know, we wrote it definitely with this concept of busy parents, right? And in particular, busy white moms. But I think it transcends that, right? It goes into corporations, it goes into schools. I'm just super excited that we're able to have this conversation in so many places.
I love it. I want to say something about that too, because so many books, especially in the last 2 years, have been geared towards busy white women or busy women in general. Why? Because we have impact. And traditionally, historically, believing we don't. And I think, you know, the more work, well, first of all, writing my own book, I thought it was about cancer. And I was like, fuck, this is patriarchy. And then the more I learn and talk and read, I'm like, oh shit. You know, this whole belief that we don't matter, like our actions don't make an impact. And then moving from guilt to power. So, you know, I've gone through my own little journey and now I'm like, what are you going to do with your privilege? Like, it's like having a whole bunch of money stuffed under your mattress and somebody's knocking on your door saying, I need food. I need to pay my rent. And you're like, sorry, I can't help you. And so I actually think it's selfish not to work on yourself as a white woman, because I believe we have a lot of influence, whether it's a microphone or a voice or just standing, you know, just being like, that's not what we say. We're going to have this uncomfortable conversation. We need to use our voice, because that's not fair that, if we can create a whole culture around whiteness, imagine what we can do if everyone just speaks up. So I wanted to say, thank you to both of you for the painful and tedious job of writing a book and putting it together and putting it out into the world, knowing that, you know, you're going to get those reviews and criticism and feedback even before it's out. You know, there's a lot to that goes into this. And you're just like, wow, judgment based on, don't judge a book by its cover, right? Don't judge a book by its cover. So I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see what you create, and encouraging everybody that's listening to this to stop what they're doing, pull over on the side of the road, just don't even feed your children dinner, go buy the book, or download it wherever the audiobook is. Go follow them on Instagram. That's what you need to do. This is way more important than anything else that you're going to do today. So thank you, both of you, Sarah and me, Sasha.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's it. And I wanted to thank you for listening today, because I truly believe you are exactly where you need to be. And now I have a favor to ask. In exchange for the value you've gained from this free podcast, I'd be forever grateful if you would leave us a review on iTunes. Share the show with at least one woman in your life who you feel would benefit, and or take a screenshot and share it on social media, and always feel free to tag me at Heather Chauvin. The world does not benefit from your guilt and fatigue. The world needs more women who are willing to unlearn everything they've been taught. Women who are courageous enough to feel good and not let guilt run the show. I believe you are that courageous woman. To see if my community and coaching is the right fit for you and your big vision, the relationships you desire, the money, time, energy that you know deep down you are capable of creating, then head on over to heatherchauvin.com/work with me. That's Heather Chauvin, CHAUVIN.com/work with me, and take the next step in the right direction. Taking a stand for how you feel means you are taking a stand for how your children show up as adults. And if you have a personal question or topic you'd like me to answer on the podcast, text me 313-710-5199. 313-710-5199. You are so worthy of feeling good. Now go do some scary shit.
I sometimes joke that I wish I taught people how to make green smoothies for a living, but I know I'm doing that because I'm trying to run away from what brings me joy. And what brings me joy is helping women and men, families in general, and children feel alive. And sometimes that journey to feeling alive is painful. It's emotionally uncomfortable, and it's not always easy. This is why I created the Aligned Life Quiz. So if you're tired of being tired, you want to stop just surviving, and you want to find out exactly where to focus and access realistic tools to confidently manage your energy, emotions, and impact, you can head on over to heatherchauvin.com/life quiz. It takes you 2 minutes, and it's going to show you, I call them internal leadership skills. Where do you need to focus your energy and attention for the quickest results? And also, which phase are you living in? So head on over to heatherchauvin.com/life quiz to take the Aligned Life Quiz right now. If you're ready to stop just surviving and you want to start thriving, but you don't know how to manage it all, go there. It will take you 2 minutes and it will change your life. I also, on the inside, show you which podcast episodes to listen to based on your quiz results. heatherchauvin.com/life, L-I-F-E, quiz.